friendship, conversation, and refreshments in the Kate Worker Room just through these doors. If you're a newcomer here this morning, we extend a special welcome and invite you to fill out at one of our visitor cards found in the back of your hymnal and put it in the offering plate or give it to an usher, and we'll send you out a church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know all about the programs and activities going on at church. If you have children with you, they are invited to attend our religious education programs when the children leave for the classes later in the service. We do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children. Adults are encouraged to attend religious education programming at 11:50 after the service. If you would like to learn more about this church and Unitarian Universalism, there is an information rack in our fellowship hall through these doors where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other visitor information that you are certainly welcome to take home with you. Of course, we encourage you to speak with the members, to learn and encourage current members to seek out visitors and share with them this beloved community. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. And now, I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. For today's announcements, Sunday, January 11th, these come from Mary Johnson. You want to stand and be recognized? Liturgists are needed for services in February. If you are willing to serve the church in this way, please talk to Mary Johnson today. Next announcement. Next Sunday, January 18th, the Alton branch of the NAACP will hold its 35th annual Martin Luther King Jr. commemorative service at 3 p.m. at Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church on Amelia Street in Alton. Everyone is invited to attend. The theme is Peace, Be Still. And our third announcement. If you have recently asked to have a name tag made, please look on the desk in the Kate Worker Room to see if it's there. If you would like to have a name tag, please fill out one of the blue cards on the desk and put it in the black box on the desk.
We have a few additional announcements. First, next Sunday at 11:50 a.m., weather permitting, we will have our semi-annual congregational meeting. If there are any board members present, will you stand up? Okay. So Sabrina and Michelle, if you have any questions, you can speak with them. There are some changes in the works, so we do highly encourage you to be there. And of course, we need as many voters as possible for quorum. Today at 11:50, we will show the third part of the video, Race, the Power of an Illusion, which talks about the history of the construction of race in the United States from around 1900 until present day, including Supreme Court decisions related to race and many other interesting things. And then in 2 weeks, we'll have an Enneagram program for those who have already attended the Intro to Enneagram class. If you're interested in learning more about the Enneagram and haven't been able to attend but would like to learn more, you can speak to me personally, and I'm happy to sit down and meet with anybody who wants to kind of go through the basic process. And I believe that concludes this morning's announcements.
We begin our service this morning with a prelude.
Thank you.
May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to the community, and to each other. As Jonah lights our chalice, please join me in reciting these words. Love is the spirit of search, and its service is its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Our opening hymn is projected behind us, and also number 10-8 in the teal hymnal, When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place. Please arise as you are able and willing.
Thank you. day than the dark. Secret night and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry, I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
We now invite our children to go on to their classes and have a blessed day. Please join us in singing them on their way.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitudes or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There will be time to share concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
I want to thank everyone for their blessings, prayers, and comments. For Giselle, my cat, who had been sick this week, nothing major, it sounds like, colitis and some other things, but very manageable, and she's a much happier cat, so thank you very much.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any sorrows or concerns you bring with you to church this morning.
This has been the week for cat problems. My cat, Kramer, who I had for almost 20 years, died suddenly this week. It was just, the vet thought it might be like a stroke because he was fine that night, and then the next morning he couldn't do anything at all with his front legs, so he couldn't have gotten up or moved around or did anything. So I decided to let him go at that point. I thought it was better for him. So think of me, you know, it's like a family member that when you lose a pet that you've had that long.
I'd like to ask your prayers and good wishes and healing energy to go to the childhood friend of my daughter-in-law. She's in the hospital now. She's been struggling with Crohn's disease, and now she has developed pneumonia and one lung is not functioning. She's been put in an induced coma, and she's on a respirator, and she's only 41 years old. We're afraid she's not going to make it this week.
May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all. And may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts. A burden shared becomes a load lightened.
I invite you now to join me in a time of meditation, prayer, or contemplation, as is your own personal practice. And I invite you to become comfortable in your seat, in your pew, and just to be aware of the world surrounding you. Take note of the smells and the sounds. Too often in our busy weeks, we have so little time for silence, for presence. So I invite you to let your current concerns fade away and to just be here in this moment and to focus on your breathing. I invite you to take a slow, deep breath in and out. One more time in and out. Now one more time so your neighbor can hear you. In and out. We engage our loving minds and our thoughtful hearts this day. We hold in our thoughts and bless with our presence those experiencing times of sorrow and loss, and those who are experiencing times of illness and pain. We have many in our community who suffer with pain daily, who live with chronic illnesses, who struggle. May we be present for them and aware of their needs and their concerns. And may they for a time be able to lay these concerns in this sacred space, sacred by our presence and the presence of generations. We offer to our thoughtfulness, to our heart and to our care, those in times of struggle, to those in France who have known violence, for those in Ferguson, for those throughout the world in times of war, including Syria, and for those returning from war, often lost, confused, and dealing with injuries of their own, both seen and unseen. For all who are experiencing violence and uncertainty, may we provide our care and our action. And even as we face struggles and uncertainty, grief and loss, fear, May we know that always alongside these things are beauty and hope, joy, wisdom, and grace. We lift up those who are experiencing times of joy and triumph and success in their lives, and we open ourselves to the beauty of the world around us, of a freezing river, of a time of inward contemplation for the earth and for ourselves. May we choose to bless the world with our lives. I invite you now into a time of silent meditation, prayer, or contemplation. And as we come back into this space, I invite you to say aloud those names of people or places you wish to have special consideration or blessing. Giselle. For all those named and unnamed, for those concerns and joys lying in the silent sanctuaries of our hearts, we offer our blessing. I invite you one more time to take a deep breath in and out. One more time so your neighbor can hear you, in and out. May it be so. Please join in singing our meditation hymn, 1002, Comfort Me.
Thank you. speak for me. Speak for me. Speak for me, oh my soul.
We give, not so that we can keep the lights on, but rather because having the lights on means we can be together. We give, not so that we can have the heat on, but rather because we recognize that not all of us have heat. We give, not to pay the minister or staff, but because having a minister and staff to challenge and encourage us to transform our lives. We give not because we are obligated to, but because through our giving, the community offers us meaning and support. We give, in short, not because it makes the church possible. We give because the church helps make all of us together possible. This morning's offering will be greatly received. May it be joyfully given.
Welcome again to this neighborhood. I'd like to show you something. You know what this is? Well, maybe if I press this button. This is a cassette player with a little cassette in here, and there's nothing written on it. So we'll just have to play it to see what it is.
Do you ever imagine things?
Are they scary things?
Are they scary things?
Do you ever imagine things? Things you'd like to have? Did you ever see a cat's eyes in the dark and wonder what they were?
Did you ever pretend about things like that before?
Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind.
It's good to be curious about many things. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think and they'll grow. Imagine every person that you see is somewhat different from every other person in the world. Some can do some things, some can do others. Did you ever think of the many things you've learned to do? Many things.
Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind? You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind.
It's good to be curious about many things.
You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think and they'll grow. Did you feel like going like that?
Let's give the fish some food.
Mr. McFeely,
I didn't order any whistles.
That's what they call.
many things to learn about in this world, and so many people who can help us learn, and so many people who can help us learn.
Did you ever grow anything in the garden of your mind?
In the garden of your mind.
You can grow ideas in the garden of your mind.
In the garden of your mind.
It's good to be curious about many things.
You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think. You can think about things and make believe. All you have to do is think, and they'll grow.
Invite you to join in reciting our offertory blessing. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings.
One reading today, the words of Stefan Jonassohn. Does liberal religion have a future? As long as our congregations offer a welcoming home to those seeking a spiritual community, as long as they convey their principles and values in a way that are relevant to the spirit of the age, as long as they branch out in service to the thirsty, longing souls who may have been nourished and sustained, even saved, by our positive and progressive faith, then the answer is yes. And not just any future, but a robust one. What I know for certain is that liberal religion will not have a promising future without us. We can be the beginning of its end through complacency and resistance to change, or we can be the agents of its transformation for a new generation, the harbingers of its future. Does liberal religion have a future? I hope so. I expect so. For the sake of the world, it had better.
How's everybody doing today? Can you hear me all right? So I'd like to start with maybe an obvious thing. Has anybody noticed any changes in the Catholic Church recently? Tell you, Pope Francis has been busy, has he not? It's refreshing in so many ways, I have to admit. What's interesting, though, is it's no accident, and it's not just because of Pope Francis that these changes have occurred. The path was laid to allow the Pope to become Pope through a visioning process within the Catholic Church and other Christian communities that began at least 15 years ago, if not longer. Like most religions today, the Catholic Church has been seeing the trend that fewer and fewer people are attending church, and more people are identifying as non-affiliated, or what is known in common parlance as the nuns. And by this, I don't mean with habits, I mean N-O-N-E, nun. Realizing that they needed to reshape their vision of the future, they commissioned a study with this key question: what does religion look like in the 21st century? Now, before I get into understanding the future, I think it's important that we understand some of our past, in particular, the language of generations. Some people, when they hear that term generation, they think of age immediately. And age is certainly a factor in differing generations, but it isn't the key thing that makes the difference. Really, what matters in terms of generation is the historical, social, and technological context in which a person was born into. There are people who were born in the late 1980s who may have more in common with Generation X or Generation Y. There are baby boomers who tend to prefer the same things as Gen Xers. Generation refers to the overall experiences of the world that each generation has had. As a society seems to be changing at a more rapid pace, these generational experiences seem to be changing at a more rapid pace as well. To give you some sense of what we're talking about with generations, let's first start with our greatest generation, as they like to be called, those born in 1901 to 1924. Anybody willing to share that they were born in 1901 to 1924? They're called the greatest generation because they were born during the time of World War I, at a time when the vision of America was upward and onward forever. Everything was possible during this generation's growing up time. What they had not experienced at this point, some of the many difficult things that would come up for the next generation. These were folks born during World War I, who many of which fought in World War II. The silent generation was born from around 1925 to 1945. Do we have any folks here willing to acknowledge that generation? They are known as the silent generation, which may seem unkind, but keep in mind, this is a generation who was born into the Great Depression, into the time of World War II and the experiences with Nazism. And in particular, they are called the silent generation because of McCarthyism. They were born in a time when it may even be dangerous to speak some of the liberal values that we espouse now, and who had to be careful how and what they said to those around them for fear of persecution. The baby boomer generation is born roughly 1946-ish to the early 1960s. Do we have any baby boomers in the room? Yes. Baby boomers experienced everything from the post-World War II era, McCarthyism, as well as the Korean War. And they also were growing into the age of the great changes of the 1960s. They were children during the times of segregation and the elimination of segregation and all the changes that came from the civil rights movement. There are generally defined early boomers and late boomers. Early boomers tend to have more in common with the silent generation, late boomers more with the Gen X generation, and there's some overlaps there. Gen Xers are roughly born between the early 60s and early 80s. We have any Gen Xers here? I am one of those. Okay. Woo, yeah. Yes, we were in that woo generation. We grew up in a time when the sexual revolution had occurred or was occurring, when women were speaking up for their rights, when LGBT people were being beaten in the streets for espousing their views. We grew up in a time of possibility when we had attained the moon, and we grew up in a time when the Cold War was ever present. Generation Y, or the millennial generation, are those born in the early 1980s to 2000s. We have any millennials or Gen Yers here? Yay! We have a few who are willing to admit to it. That's not meant to sound as harsh as it did. Just only two people rose their hand, and I know there are more than that in here. Millennials and Generation Y experienced Reagan in their ears. They experienced the power of the space program. They existed at a time when many of the old things were falling apart, including the Cold War and the Berlin Wall. They also grew up at a time of amazing change and transformation in technology. Many millennials will not remember a time of 8-tracks. I had an 8-track, I remember. Definitely not reel-to-reels, and certainly did not have to bear the struggle of walking up to the television to change it. They may have never known a time without the internet or barely remember it, and have always had access to email if they were able to access it by their class status. And the final generation, the current generation, is Generation Z for the moment, not as in zombie, though I think they probably proudly claim it. These are children who have only known a world post 9/11, who have only known a country at war. And all of these generations are particular to the generations in the United States. Go to another country, the generational experiences will be different. Generation Z will never have had to deal with a pencil and a tape cassette. Though they will see the comeback of vinyl. They have never known a time without cell phones. And they have never known a time where it wasn't possible, if at least to go to the library, to get access to any information they could possibly want. They, however, are growing up in a world where they know they will face debt at the hands of past generations and the uncertainty of a world as it grows warmer. So as we begin to think of a religion of the future, generation matters because we want to consider faith formation needs of all people and to recognize that the faith formation needs of the generation who as children saw the first picture of the earth from the moon on television varies in significant ways from the generation who as children saw Challenger explode. Who differ significantly from those who have only ever known a time when we were striving towards the Mars missions. Very different experiences indeed. Now, in considering the changes in society, particularly for the generations who are no longer showing up at religious buildings, the Catholic Church, and not long after, many other religious institutions began to ask the question, what does religion look like in the 21st century? What are the changing needs so that religion continues into the future? And upon surveying more than 300,000 people, looking at current trends, focusing on generational religious needs, and developing scenarios for the future, the truth was clear. Religious institutions, in fact, institutions in general, are not the way of the future, or what most people are looking for in a religious or even communal experience. In the United States, the resulting report was called Faith Formation 2020. In it, John Roberto, the leader of the project, described 8 significant driving forces influencing the faith of the future. I'll describe them briefly here, and you need not remember all 8. If you really care, you can go look up John Roberto's work online. However, the purpose of describing them is to give you a sense of the driving forces and an overall landscape of what we are facing today. The first driving force is not new. It's the number of people attending religious communities is dropping, period. People are just not going to church. An increasing number of people identify with no religious affiliation at all. In Unitarian Universalism, our numbers have risen slightly in recent years. That is primarily in part due to the growth of Unitarian Universalism in the South, where Christianity is on the decline. Even more than that, approximately 6 times as many people identify as being a Unitarian Universalist as attend church. 6 times as many identify as being a UU as attend church. Imagine if 6 times as many people were here today. These are people who seek out congregations or ministers only in times of crisis or uncertainty, if they ever seek it out at all. The second driving force is an increasing number of people identifying as more spiritual than religious. Anybody here identify as more spiritual than religious? Or will, yes, as I said, it's a pretty common UU identity. These are people who identify with a drive towards deeper meaning-making, but find their needs are not met in religious communities that they have seen. Many find spiritual strength in yoga, personal spiritual practice, online sources, or one-off events such as a retreat center or a spiritual workshop. More and more people are deciding to fulfill spiritual needs in ways that are separate from a religious community. It is not to say that spiritual but not religious people do not attend church. Many are UUs. However, in some ways, our religious tradition, and in some ways, our religious tradition are placed to meet the needs of those who are spiritual but not religious. So in other words, we could be the wave of the future. The third driving force that results from the first two is a declining participation in religious community. This is most apparent in Catholic and Protestant churches. They can be seen in almost any religious community around the United States and the world. The fourth driving force is increasing diversity and pluralism in the United States. More and more people are finding wisdom not from the religions of their heritage or their family, but from many religious and cultural traditions present in the United States. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. Many in the millennial and current generation grew up with people from all over the world who spoke different languages, had different cultures, and celebrated different religious traditions. This contact with diversity has resulted in adults who do not wish to attend a religious community with a focus on just one truth or one path. Again, Unitarian Universalism finds itself uniquely placed to meet this trend and the needs of upcoming generations. The fifth driving force and increasing influence of individualism on identity and community life. Moving naturally out of that more pluralistic society, fewer people identify with the need to relate with one specific group. Personal truth matters. Our fourth principle describes this well. We affirm and promote the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Now, let us not confuse the notion of individualism with a lack of desire for relationship or connection. In fact, the upcoming generations are in many ways more connected and engaged than many of them before. However, they are no longer tied to a specific cohort group or the need to be a specific religious or social community to fulfill their needs. They can remain autonomous and deeply connected at the same time. The sixth driving force is that fewer young people are getting married and having children later in their lives. Often religious affiliation in the U.S. is tied to settling down and having kids. This results in fewer people searching for a religious community at a younger age, if they search at all. In addition, with the freedom to be out and open, many same-sex and queer families will avoid religious community altogether. People are looking to church less for stability than they were even 10 years ago. The seventh driving force is that with fewer families attending church or feeling a need to be deeply religious, fewer children and youth are learning to be involved in religious community. This has the dual impact in that people may not know where to turn in the event of a crisis, but it also means that online resources and relationships with friends and loved ones proves to be more important than seeking out a religious community. The final trend is no surprise, the increasing impact of digital media and web technology. With the advent of computers and smartphones, tablets, and hundreds of other technologies that have come around in the world, it has changed how people relate and how they understand the world around them. I myself attend an online congregation with online worship every week. So that's the picture. Fewer people are going to religious communities. Fewer people feel the need to be expressly religious. Society is changing in diversity and family development, and technology is creating opportunities where none existed before. It is literally changing how people communicate, how they seek out community, and how they find spiritual substance. If it was not clear in these descriptions, Unitarian Universalism is uniquely placed to respond to many of these changes. As our president of the UUA, Reverend Peter Morales, writes, "The great cultural shift in America, and in the world for that matter, is on our side. One indication is the rapidly growing number of people with no religious affiliation. Attitudes of younger people in such issues as marriage equality, environmental justice, and immigration are further examples. People can maintain unique identities, explore a variety of religious, spiritual, and philosophical concepts, and we value diversity and pluralistic community." We can be the religion of the future. But truthfully, that's not enough. Where we struggle is in meeting the new ways that people are seeking out a religious and spiritual life and understanding how technology is meeting those needs. The Faith Formation Report and resulting research determined four scenarios of the future to help religious communities begin to imagine how they might meet the needs of future generations. They consider the fact that the key differences in the future have to do with how much of a spiritual life people may want and whether they will be resistant or open to organized religion. Out of this visioning process and looking at the forces influencing the change in religious leadership today, that meets the needs of all generations, the concept was formed of looking at a lifelong faith formation network. And this, I think, is important for us to keep in mind. Essentially, what is being suggested is that that interdependent web of all existence be the way that we shape church, Rather than coming to a building, we develop web-like relationships with the people in our community. Focus less on being in a space and more of being out and with each other in the world. Faith formation was chosen because it can mean a wide array of things to people. It meets the needs of diverse understandings and helps us to imagine people where they are in their lives. How do we form as human beings with a spiritual impulse? And remember, for those who have been with me throughout this year, when I say spiritual, and when you mean spiritual, we typically mean how we make meaning in our lives. Spiritual. Lifelong recognizes that there are differing needs over the course of a life, and different resources need to be available to meet those needs. And perhaps the biggest and most significant change in visioning for the future of religion is the language of network, a word that literally has had no meaning until the past few decades. In the book, in the Leading Ideas newsletter of Wesley Theological Seminary, Martin Davies writes, quote, "Hence the Pew Report subtitle, which could well become a working definition of social media, titled Detached from Institutions, Networked with Friends, this social media is all about meaningful networks. And yet this remains the major criticism of the medium, a charge largely leveled by those who don't use the tools in question. The person who complains, for example, that nothing meaningful can be said in 140 characters fails to realize that good Twitter communication or a long series of 140 character statements among two or more users, in other words, they are conversations. Almost by definition, institutions have a hard time interacting in this way. And so the religion of the future moves away from thinking institutionally and begins to think relationally. I want us to return to thinking about Pope Francis for a minute. Remember him? Been a little while since we talked about him. Think about some of the most significant changes he has made. And notice how many of them are relational. Washing the feet of prisoners. Having a Twitter account. And if you don't follow the Pope Twitter account, it's fun. And interacting with the people on Twitter. Living his values through more simplistic living that remains in touch with how most people in the world actually live. Even while being one of the most powerful and visible figures in the world, he keeps it real. Detached from institutions, networked with friends. Detached from institutions, networked with friends. Pope Francis has stopped focusing on the institutional stances and begun to focus on the relational needs of the upcoming generation, recognizing that networking transcends generation. Even think about his commentary on the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender communities, in which he doesn't say that the stance of the church is wrong, but the relationships between people is what matters, focusing more on what people are needing in this day, which is positive relationships. Not institutional judgment. A lifelong faith development network looks at moving religion beyond simply a specific community or building. Rather than trying to meet the needs of just one generational preference or style of religious, spiritual, or lack thereof, the network provides multiple opportunities for engagement. It does not eliminate the need for location, a church building, retreat center, or other institutional form, but rather transforms religion away from institutional thinking to that network thinking. So in addition to having us here in this church building on Sunday, perhaps we have a group going out and doing social justice work on Sunday morning, and we have online worship, and we have a Facebook group that helps deal with grieving, and we have different ways of meeting the needs within this community, building more and more relationship. First and foremost, lifelong faith development networks offer opportunities for relationship that are both face-to-face and virtual. You're able to be in relationship with a religious life on your own, from home, with mentors, in small and large groups, with church communities, and through service to your community and the world. A Faith Formation network includes church programs, small groups, support groups, community programs, online resources, video conferences, applications, blogs, social media, teleconferences, user-generated content, and beyond. It may seem like a lot, but the key thing to remember is that no one person will necessarily engage in all of this. That also happens to be the point. In a religious reality where people have autonomy over their religious life, finding the best way to engage spiritually matters. Religious buildings continue to be important. Community continues to be important. But we become more like curators of spiritual and religious opportunities than institutionally or community focused. Reverend Peter Morales articulates the Unitarian Universalist vision of how our own religion, as we prepare for the future of as congregations and beyond. In other words, we maintain our congregations as the base of operations and look at how we move beyond our walls, meeting the needs of a changing religious landscape. In that world, we become service-oriented. The millennial generation does not want to come to church on Sunday and be lectured to. They don't want to come and hear a talking head, as much as I would love it if they did. They want to be agents in the world. First Unitarian Church of Oakland on Sundays has three services, a morning service and a late morning service, a children's service, and in addition, a social action project. It could be going door to door, signing up people to vote. It could be feeding people on the streets. It could be camping out with Occupy Wall Street, as they did for many months. Whatever they do, it is action-oriented. And we need to remain technologically connected and relevant, as you saw in some of our technology today. You'll notice that in that technology, particularly the playing for change, that focuses on relationships, and relationships with people all around the world. Those children in Los Angeles and France and the Congo did not meet each other, but they still met each other online, and they still sang together in one voice. Using technology to build those relationships fosters a connected, meaningful spiritual life. In Unitarian Universalism, there are all kinds of new ways of organizing. There's a Lucy Stone Cooperative in Boston of young adults who are committed to living together and living their values in justice and service. There is a Unitarian Universalist Coffee House forming in San Francisco, where you go and get coffee, and there will be opportunities for yoga and discussion groups and philosophy groups and everything you can imagine under the sun. I think somebody was really smart in realizing UUs are really about coffee hour. And our Standing on the Side of Love campaign recognizes that while we may not all agree on the justice motivations, we may not all agree on what's going on in Ferguson or in Syria or in anything in the world, but that we are committed to love. And so, for example, when we marched in the march in St. Louis around Ferguson, we as a group sang songs about love and connection, and said that whatever we may believe, we're about relationship here and now, a voice that needs to be heard in the world, standing on the side of love. It's about relationship. It's about networks of creating meaning and hope. So here's what I know. If the Pope and the Catholic Church can change to meet the needs of the future, then I'm absolutely sure we can, can't we? The Pope can do it, I can too, and so can you. And so let us live in the footsteps and legacy of the Pope without being Catholic and create a religion for the future. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 121, We'll Build a Land. Thank you. to face across the chandelier. So, remember what I said about relationship. This is our moment to be a networked community. Look around the room and give a smile to these folks. This is our community of relationship and connection. I invite you to go into the world knowing that you are enough. You are amazingly enough that you can bless the world with your presence. And so may you choose to bless the world and help others find meaning and hope, grace, and spirit, and a little silliness too. I invite you to wave at one another and have a blessed week. May it be so.